My name is Christine McDonald, and everyone calls me Mac. I am a zookeeper at Roger Williams Park Zoo in Providence, Rhode Island.
Hello, I'm John Rossi. I'm a touring drummer with a passion for animal conservation. When I'm on the road, I spend as much time as possible visiting zoos, aquariums, and conservation organizations. Now, I want to share those places with you. I'll be talking to keepers, vets, conservationists, anyone who can help me in my mission of connecting my people to animals through their people. Join me on my raw safari.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Tree Kangaroo Podcast, starring me, Tree Kangaroo. Tree Kangaroos, Tree Kangaroos. Sorry. Got a little carried away there, y'all. But I'm really, really excited because today's episode is coming to you from Roger Williams Park Zoo, as you just heard. And Christine McDonald, who we all lovingly call Mac, is my guest today. And she is the queen of the tree kangaroos at Roger Williams Park Zoo. And y'all, it was such a good time getting to go and hang with the tree roos. Don't forget, they have a little Joey up there right now, Paya. And, did I get to see Paya? Well, you'll have to find out by listening to the episode or by hearing the absolute excitement in my voice. Anyway, this is one of those episodes where we really do a deep dive on one species, both about the species and about the specific animals at the zoo. I think we cover, you know, one question covering all of Mac's other animals, because I briefly remembered that they exist. But yeah, this is just, I'm so excited. I have to tell y'all, I have wanted to do this very episode since basically I started the podcast. And the fact that it is now here for you is wildly exciting to me, as you can tell by my rambly intro. So real quick reminder that, you can follow along. Make sure you hit subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. And make sure that you follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Rossafari, at Rossafari Pod on the TikTok machine. And if you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so for as little as $3 a month by going to patreon.com. And I've said all the things I need to say other than tree kangaroo, tree kangaroo, tree kangaroo. And what do you take care of?
I work in the adaptation section, which has kind of a mix of species. But my favorite animal is the Matchy's tree kangaroo.
Yes, I'm so excited. I have to tell you, I'm very thankful that you were on the pod. I know that I bugged Corey about this before, and I know we've had some other people from the zoo on, but I was hoping to get to talk to you at some point. So thank you for doing this.
You are welcome.
So let's start off, we'll get to the tree roos, and oh boy, will we. But let's start off by you telling me a little bit about yourself. So like, when did you know that you liked animals?
Well, I always liked animals, but I didn't really think about it as a career until high school. And I took my first biology class in high school, and I knew that that was something I wanted to make my future right from there. And then in college, I majored in biology. And in graduate school, zoology.
Nice. Okay. So where'd you go to grad school?
I went to grad school at the University of South Florida. And that actually was how I became a zookeeper. That I wasn't quite sure what career I was going to take. I just knew it was going to be zoology oriented. But if you have been to Tampa, the university is actually basically across the street from Busch Gardens. Mm-hmm. And so I started working there part-time in the summers. And then after I graduated, I was allowed to stay on full time, and
nice.
That's where I started.
Okay, very cool. That's exciting. And where have your journeys taken you before coming here?
So that was basically the only place before here. Years ago, they sold the whole company to another park, and they did a lot of shifting of people, and I ended up having to leave. And I worked on a farm just for a short period of time, and then I started here at Roger Williams.
Okay, so I have a question. I'm confused. You were in Florida.
Yes.
I woke up today and it was 28 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
What brought you up here?
So, believe me, I think about that a lot. Actually, I'm from Massachusetts.
Okay. Really? With that accent, I couldn't tell?
Yeah. It's not super Massachusetts-y, but it's there. So I'm from Massachusetts, and I didn't love winter, which is why I moved to Florida. And actually, I was there almost 10 years. And then, family... job related things like that. I do have a child, and it certainly is easier to raise him around family. Plus the culture in New England, education, a lot of things that I like, just because I'm comfortable with them being someone that grew up here. So I still don't like winter, but I think it was a good move. And now that I'm getting to be an old lady, I will again consider moving somewhere nice and toasty.
Fair. Tree kangaroos. I usually take so much longer for the, like, let's talk about you part, but I'm so stinking excited to talk about tree roos. So you did actually get to go back to Florida recently because the Tree Kangaroo Safe program, was that what it was, meetings or SSP?
It was an SSP meeting.
Yeah, okay. I knew it was one of those things. Yeah, down in Miami, right?
In Miami, which was beautiful, 80 degrees, sunny.
Nice.
Loving it. Lots of lizards, which I like. I know that's odd, but...
No, I'm with you on that one.
I love to walk around and see a lizard run by. Mm-hmm. It's kind of cool. We don't have that up here, obviously, so that's neat. So keepers from mostly the U.S., sometimes they'll have an international meeting, but this was more of a national meeting for keepers of tree kangaroos. And we had about 25 to 30 keepers that attended, which was a good turnout. And we cover pretty much every aspect of how we take care of them, as well as research projects that are currently being done on them and the conservation activities and issues that are also at the same time being addressed in the wild and how we help them from the zoo side of things. So it covers a lot. We have speakers. We have a microbiologist. We have an endocrinologist. We have, we're looking for an immunologist, if anybody is interested.
I'm interested. I'm not an immunologist, but I really want to come to the next meeting.
You kind of have to be an immunologist to be our immunologist, but you can come to the meeting. but lots, every aspect that you can think of for tree kangaroos, sharing information, which is really important, and networking, which is really important. It's a small group. The SSP is small because there's not a lot of tree kangaroos. But the good thing about that is it is a small group of people, and so it's easy to know everybody and easier to work together.
Yeah, that's very cool. And, you know, I think that's a really great example of something that I try to highlight on this podcast, which is that, you know, like you said, the SSP is small. Do you know roughly how many tree kangaroos are in it right now?
For the Matthews tree kangaroo, there's somewhere around 45.
Okay, yeah, and that's not many, and they're spread out over maybe what, 20 facilities?
About 20.
Yeah. So it's interesting to think about the fact that there's this conference that is held. Like, you know, I was at the AZA conference earlier this year, and that's obviously all of the AZA stuff and big zoos and all kinds of stuff. But there's this little conference held just for this one species that most people don't really know exists. You know, that's something that for my listeners I want to point out. If you're listening to this podcast, you've heard more about tree kangaroos than like 98% of even the zoo loving population, because I happen to love them. But like, this is just not a well-known species, but y'all still go and you do the thing and you have these specialists come in and talk to y'all. And I just think that shows just how amazing the care that animals get in, you know, good accredited zoos is. And I think that's so cool that I'm so jealous that you got to go. I mean, it makes sense. It's literally your career and I'm a drummer, but I'm still jealous. But I hope that everyone, you know, realizes that those types of things happen. And it's not just tree kangaroos. This just happens for lots of species.
That's true.
I think that's very cool. So can you give me just a little primer on like tree kangaroos? Like if I've got a lot of new listeners to this podcast and they may not have heard me ranting too much about them yet. So can you give a basic, like, what is a Matthews tree kangaroo, you know, basics?
Okay. So tree kangaroos are true kangaroos, but they live in trees. scientists believe that most likely they descended from a rock wallaby.
Okay.
Wallabies are kangaroos. They're just smaller. If you've ever seen rock wallabies or types of brush wallabies, some of them you can see climbing up rocks or climbing up trees. And probably something like that is what was the original ancestor to a tree kangaroo. Initially, when New Guinea was connected to Australia, that was when tree kangaroos started to delineate, and they really branched out once they were in New Guinea, because in New Guinea, there are no large mammals up in the trees. Like in other parts of the world, there's monkeys, binturong, which you love. But in that particular area, nothing. So there's no competition for them up in the trees. So as they, you know, ascended into trees and adapted in various ways, they could really utilize the habitat there. And so they became specialized to different areas of the island, and that's how they speciated into different species. So right now there's 14 recognized species of tree kangaroo, 2 in mainland Australia on the very northern tip, and then the other 12 in New Guinea. And the Machi tree kangaroo is probably the best studied on the island, and they come from a peninsula called the Huon Peninsula on the northern part of the island. So initially, about 4 or 5 of those species ended up in zoos. But over time, all of them had very small populations, and they were phased out except primarily for Machi tree kangaroos, which right now are in zoos in the United States and North America. And then the Goodfellow tree kangaroo, yes, which are held in zoos in Australia, Asia, and I don't believe there's any in Africa at this point in time. So primarily Australia and Asia. They actually about 10 years ago, they decided to concentrate like that. That was actually an SSP decision. We had both Machis and Goodfellows in the United States.
Really?
We did.
Oh my goodness. I didn't know there were Goodfellows here back in the day. That's there cool. were.
And they had Machis and Goodfellows in Europe, Asia, right, and Australia. Right. But the logistics of breeding and shipping and moving animals, it's much easier if we concentrate. So the SSP decided as a group to concentrate all the Machis in North America and all the other ones in the old world so that breeding situations would be easier. So there is, I believe, a Machis left in Paris and Singapore, and that's it for Machis outside of the United States. We have all the rest of them here.
Okay, very cool. Did you hear? So there are the two species that are still living in Australia, and I don't know how far this has gone yet, but apparently they are starting just in Australian zoos to bring in, I want to say, the
Lumholtz
into captivity, just like to try to help maintain the population and everything. So there's now a third, but it's only in a few zoos. A few others are starting to look into it. So
yeah, for the mainland species, fragmentation of habitat has been really a crisis for them, because obviously humans live there and the habitats are primarily gone, and they're on like little islands of habitat. And so those two species really do need a hand. So that's good to hear. They also, unfortunately, are affected a lot by dogs and cars.
Yes.
And those two are not issues for the animals in New Guinea. So they face really probably more threats than the ones in New Guinea at this point in time. It's good to know that they're going to start working for them in zoos too, because they really need it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of funny to think from a like ecological evolutionary standpoint, like it's like they got left behind, like mm-hmm. literally, like as the land split, you know, from Australia and Papua New Guinea. And then they got left behind, and now they're stuck with all the humans and the dogs and the cars. And yeah, it's kind of interesting watching, you know, that happen in action. Like it's interesting to think about. Yeah. But so tree kangaroos, what is there, like, I know there are different species, but in general, what are we talking about? Are we endangered, or, you know, how are we doing population wise?
In general, we're talking endangered. That's because the species, again, are kind of specialized and very restricted in their ranges, which don't usually overlap. So something like the Machi's tree kangaroo is a high elevation animal. And so they won't live in a lowland area. And then there's lowland tree kangaroos, and they won't live in a high area, you know. So so they're very restricted to a generally very small geographic range. And any population that only lives in one little spot obviously can easily be damaged and easily be lost. So they are all considered endangered, although we don't really have specific population numbers to say exactly how many animals that is.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, cool. And they are the cutest thing.
They are the cutest
thing. Scientifically speaking, they are the cutest thing. And so let's talk about the Machis that y'all have here. Mm-hmm. And we have to start off with the newbie. Tell me about the baby, because there's a Joey here and we just got to meet the Joey. It was the coolest thing ever.
It's fantastic. This is the third Joey that has been born since I've been here, but this mom, this is her first Joey. And actually, so in 20 years, three Joeys is obviously not a lot. And that's another reason tree kangaroos, are a susceptible species. They don't breed fast.
Right.
And they don't really have to, because in the wild, like I say, no resource competition, really no natural predators, just a few. So they live a very, mellow lifestyle and don't have to breed fast. So, but in zoos, that can be hard for us because it's a gap between babies and hard to up your population over time. So we're really excited. The mom just turned three. Her name is Kay Wang, and she moved in last year from Seattle.
Yay, Woodland Park.
Yep, she's a West Coast moving to the East Coast. So she made a journey. And the dad is Morobe, and he's an older guy. And he was born in Albuquerque, lived a few places in between, and he's been here, I'd say about 4 or 5 years. And he's very mellow. The mom, Kay Wang, not so mellow. Hopefully the mix will make an in-between baby. That would be nice. And this is their first offspring. Her name is Paya. It's a girl. And she just turned 8 months old. So she's still in the pouch, which up to 10 months, she'll stay in the pouch.
She is venturing out, though, now. We got to see her come out, which was ridiculous. It lasted all of 5 seconds. But that tail is already getting so long.
Oh, it's so cute. She's a homebody, baby. That's why I feel like she's a homebody. She likes to stay in the pouch. Our last baby, Polly, was way more adventurous. By 8 months, she almost never went in the pouch. So they're very individual. That's one thing I noticed with tree kangaroos. Very individual. In general, shy, but that's about all you can say in general.
Right, right.
You know, and then aside from that, very, very individual. Some are aggressive, some are mellow, some are bold. You know, some want to see the world, some don't. Really different from one animal to the next, which is cool.
That is cool. Yeah, and I've met six now.
Okay.
The two down in Miami, and mm-hmm. then the four here, you know, and one obviously is too small to really, really get to know. But the other five, like you said, every one of them, wildly distinct personality. And I think that's one of the things that has made me fall so in love with the species. Like, I liked them from the minute I found out about them because they are, again, literally scientifically proven to be the cutest species on Earth.
I have to agree, research to back it up.
All five that I've met, though, are so different. Mm-hmm. And in talking to, like, a couple of, like, the Toronto keepers who had Collins and then Puzzle and stuff, they are all very different, too. And there's something about that that is really cool to me, like the mystery of it. I'm going to tell you, this is almost embarrassing. So this is the second time that I've been here and that we have met and that I've gotten to hang out with the Roos here. I was nervous coming here today. Zoe literally looked at me and was like, why are you nervous? Like, I do this all the time. I come and I interview and I meet cool animals. This is kind of my thing, you know? And I was so nervous. And I have a great relationship with Corey. You and I have met and got along really well. I had nothing to be nervous about, but just knowing that every tree roo is different, I just wanted it to go well. And I just wanted to be like, I don't know. I just wanted, I wanted it to be perfect because I love them so much that I actually got a little nervous, and it was perfect because they're all perfect because of course they are. But it's like, I feel like, you know, I've met 40 some red pandas now, and they all have like slight personality differences, but I know what to expect and I know how to read each of them, and I know, you know, what's, what it's going to be. And I've met multiple binturongs and the same thing, but I feel like every tree kangaroo is a new adventure. I really do.
And K Wang will make sure it doesn't go the way you want.
Yeah, I know. You instantly, you were like, all right, so maybe if we can get like a photo in this area, and she shot up to an area where you just can't.
Absolutely.
She just was like, she heard you and was just like, nope, bye.
That's very K Wang.
Yeah. I like it. Which of course I always say my two favorite things are when animals do exactly what you want them to, and when animals don't do what you want them to. Those are my two favorite things, which, you know, covers most of it.
It does.
Yeah. But so Paya, what does that mean?
So Paya means fire in Tokpa. Pisin, if I can say it right. I don't know if I say it right. I'm going to spell that for you. The common language in New Guinea that pretty much all the tribes speak is T-O-K-P-I-S-I-N. And they call it pidgin language. And Paya means fire in that language. So that is because Kay Wang, her mom, is very spicy. And we were looking for a name that kind of reflected the spiciness of the mom. And actually, I'm already getting the impression that baby will be spicy too. So it will fit her well, being fiery.
Nice. So tell me a little bit about like their personalities and their interactions. Because like, I want you to paint a picture for my listening audience, because they are really cute together.
They are really cute together. So this species actually is solitary. So when you see two together, it's either a mating pair during a cycle, or it's a mom with a kid, which is what we have right now. This is her first baby, and she's doing an amazing job. I'm very impressed. She seems to know what to do. She's very snuggly at the right times, grooming the baby, sitting with her, you know, comforting her. But then also, she's very strict at the right times, which is usually out of the pouch times.
Okay.
So at first, she was nervous about the baby leaving the pouch, but now the baby is definitely big enough to be getting a little exercise and doesn't particularly like to. So I've actually even seen her make the baby come out of the pouch, like actually pull her out and plop her on the floor and be like, go run around. And the baby does not want to. And she tries to go back in, and Kay will absolutely, you know, tell her no. So she can hold the pouch closed with her pouch muscle. And the baby, you know, can get pretty insistent, and then she'll lay down on her belly so the baby can't even reach her pouch. And then the baby will jump on her head and bite her ears, and she started playing back, which is good. And the first time she was like, I don't know what to do with this. And she looked kind of horrified, like, I'm not sure what to do now. But now she's figured out to play back, and then she'll start playing with the baby, and they do a little wrestling, and it's really super cute. I unfortunately, for people that visit the zoo, this baby seems to be an evening baby. So she likes to do that towards the end of the day. And usually we're closing up, and they're right, not really visible. Again, not a cooperative baby, like a not a cooperative mother.
Hey, she's fire.
She tends to be, yeah, she tends to be an evening girl. She's not a morning person.
Same, same. I hear that. I'm curious, what's it like with figuring out? So solitary?
Animals, solitary.
Right? And I mean, obviously the two are together, but other than that, solitary. And so we also have a male here and another female who we'll talk about. What's it like figuring out like who's going to be on exhibit? And is there pressure? I don't know if pressure is the right word, but like, hey, we have a Joey and it's getting featured on social media. So like, is there pressure to have that out there? How does all that work?
Definitely there. We like to have the baby out. People want to see the baby. I guess it worked in our favor that initially a baby is super tiny. So she was born in June, but people really couldn't even see her till November-ish. No. But yes, usually once people can start seeing her, we do like her to be in the exhibit. But, you know, we don't want her to have to be in there every day. Plus, all of our animals really like our exhibit. They like to go out there. They like to look out the window, like to see what people are doing. They really do. So we don't want to deny them their turn. So we make sure that mom and baby are out on the weekends. And then midweek, when it's the most quiet, the other two take turns. And we do have a schedule, a rotating schedule that is posted so that all the keepers know whose turn it is to go out. And everybody gets 2 days a week, and mom and baby get 3 days a week.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. That's cool. That works really well. And so, shit, I just thought of something. I lost it. Give me a second. See, this is why we edit. It's not just for my guests' comfort. I get so excited. One more question about
them. Yeah, they're cute. Who wouldn't be excited?
I know, so right? Cute. I know. Okay, so we'll come back to if I remember that. But let's talk about the other two treat roos here, because Morobe is amazing and LaRue is a absolute queen. Oh. So tell me all about the personalities and and who these goobers are.
So Morobe is the dad, obviously, since he's our only male, so he had to do the work there. Morobe's 16.
What's life expectancy like?
Right now in zoos, life expectancy is around 20.
Okay.
But like in a lot of mammals, the females lose their fertility, and that's usually around 15. So LaRue is also 16, and so she is no longer fertile, which is why she's a retired female. She's just here now, you know, ruling her world, but doesn't have to work. And 16 for a male, you know, he'd still be viable until the end of his life. So he is a lot older than Kay. It doesn't really matter age-wise. Personality is more of a thing. And so because he's a mellow male, he was safe to put with a small, younger female. Sometimes you don't want to put a younger female with a more aggressive male because, you know, she can't really defend herself or she may not know what to do. But sure. With somebody mellow like Morobe, they were willing to pair him with someone young. And we call him the polite tree kangaroo. Very, very polite. He's very nice with other animals. He's very nice with the people. He doesn't cause any trouble. Our last male was named Yopno, who was 100% the opposite. Yopno attacked everything. We didn't go in with him. So, you know, again, very different personalities. And then LaRue was our breeding female for many years. She came in 2012 from Detroit. And she had two surviving offspring and a few that didn't, which is normal, unfortunately, but normal for zoo animals and wild animals. And she had two females she raised to adulthood, which is great to contribute to the population.
And who were they?
So their names are Holly and Polly.
Mm-hmm. And Polly is?
Polly is in New York City.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And she just had her birthday. She turned 7.
She's so good.
She has had two daughters. Yes. So there's two grandkids. And hopefully her daughter, Luca, just met her boyfriend. And so hopefully great grandkids this year.
I love, like, I know all of these treaters. I know Luca. I know Polly. Those of you who are on the Instagram, the video of the two tree roos eating together, the baby and mom, that's Polly. So, I mean, like, this is such a small little world. I love it so much. And I also love, you should just see Mac and I sitting, like, we're hanging out with the tree roos today. And I'm just asking about these different tree roos and where they're at and how they're doing by name. No discussion of like, oh, isn't that the one at? No, we know exactly who we're talking about. And it's like we're talking about long lost friends. It just cracks me up. It's just such a small little weird world when you think about it.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
It really is.
So LaRue has been here the longest, obviously. Mm-hmm. She's been here 11 years. And LaRue's very demanding.
Yes.
But she's also pretty nice. She has to get a treat for working. It's not working out of the goodness of her heart. But if you give her something she wants, she'll give you something you want, which is nice. Actually, one of the newer keepers was laughing because she noticed that LaRue, if you haven't changed her water yet in the morning and she goes to get a drink, she doesn't take a drink. She comes and gives you the dirty look. My water is not fresh. And I was like, maybe I'm imagining that because I treat her like a queen. But one of the new keepers actually came to me and said, I think LaRue is telling me to change the water bowl. And yes, she is. So she's very demanding.
Oh my gosh.
A little bit bossy. And so she's Queen LaRue, Her Majesty.
I legitimately love her so much. I just, yeah. All of the retrievers are just so incredible here. And I remembered the question that I had.
Oh, good.
Yes. So you said that you know when Paya's birthday is.
Yes.
How do you know that? Are we talking about, like, you know what I'm saying? Because, and can you explain why that's even a good question?
Okay. So if you are familiar at all with marsupials, which I'm sure most of your listeners are, you know that they have a pouch and the baby is born very tiny, crawls into the pouch, and then develops in there for quite a long time, depending on the species, how long it will be. So it is, you know, if she has a baby and you didn't see it happen, obviously you wouldn't know that there was a baby in there. So two ways we could tell there's a baby with K-Wing. You can get really lucky and see the birth, which we did with K-Wing.
Oh my gosh, that's the coolest.
But if we don't happen to catch the birth, which is much more common, we have taught K-Wing to let us look in the pouch. LaRue also learned that. That's called a pouch check. We try to do that with all the female tree kangaroos, although some are not cooperative. But for the most part, gosh, probably 95% of the girls do a pouch check, or okay, at least 90%. And then what we do is wait till 5 days after the due date, and then we look in the pouch, and then we see baby or no baby. So with K-Wing, obviously we can do that, but we didn't really have to, although it's good because you can keep tabs on the baby.
Right.
A lot of times if they're going to lose a baby, they lose it within those first 5 days. So even if you see a birth, you want to check and see if it's still there. Sometimes it's gone. And then if they're really good at pouch check, and we try to do it every day just to keep them in practice, and then we can track the baby's growth and record specific milestones that the SSP has that they would like us to look for. So we do that as well. So we're looking for things like when we can tell the gender, when the first fur grows, when they first get whiskers, when they first get teeth, when their eyes open, things like that. They have a list of things that we look for. And so if you can pouch check, you can look at all those things too.
That's really cool. That's really cool. I have a weird question.
Sure.
I always have weird questions. I don't know what's wrong with me, but okay. So I find that with a lot of animals that look really soft, when you actually get to touch them, they are not. They're very coarse. I constantly find myself disappointing children at zoos that are like, it looks so soft. And I'm like, no kid, you're wrong. I don't actually do that too often. But anyway, tree kangaroos are genuinely like the softest thing I have ever touched.
Oh, good.
What is the inside of a pouch like? Is it just the fur, or is it like weird, gross, like, I don't know. What's the inside of a pouch like?
First of all, I'm weird too, and I'm a zookeeper, so I guess it comes with the territory, but I love marsupial pouches. I know, so weird. I don't know why we moved away from that system. I wish we all had pouches. I'm not even kidding. I love the pouch. Sometimes when it's cold out, I wish I could just jump in and be all snuggly in there. The tree kangaroo pouch has four nipples at the bottom. It's cup shaped.
Okay.
And then at the bottom, there's four nipples. The baby, whatever nipple attaches to first, that's their nipple, and they will only use that one.
Oh, wow.
To feed on. And then the pouch has some hair inside, but primarily it's not hairy. So the baby is basically skin to skin.
Okay.
And then the pouch is oily. It produces an oil, which is kind of orangey in color, which is really cool. Pouch oil is cool. People go, you're gross, but the oil keeps the baby from drying out because they have no hair
when
they're born. And also has compounds in it that kill germs. So it keeps the baby safe from certain types of germs, which is really super cool. And that has been found not just in the pouch oil of tree kangaroos, but pretty much most marsupials, as far as I know, which I don't know all of them, but most likely those properties are common across marsupials in general. So that's pretty neat.
Nice. That's really cool. Yeah. I also did not know about the nipples at the bottom. That's
they're at the bottom.
Okay, cool. That's very interesting. So I know that we are short on time, but I have one more question about tree roos and then my standard two endings. So LaRue has a favorite little treat, and I just found that so fascinating. So what is LaRue's favorite little treat?
LaRue is a big fan of oats. She seems to really like those. We use them for special occasions, training, medication, things that you know, you need a treat for. Yeah. And she loves Cheerios. So that's like her favorite little treat, and the apple cinnamon, because she's not spoiled. But she has she's a big fan of cinnamon as well. So those she likes even better than the plain ones. Apple cinnamon Cheerios are the way to go to get to her heart.
That's amazing. I just love that little, it's just so cute. I remember the first time that you were like, yeah, you could feed her some Cheerios. And I was like, that's cute that you call this like animal food Cheerios. And then you whip out a thing that says Cheerios. Yeah. And I'm like, well, damn. All right. I guess we're doing Cheerios.
There you go. Primarily now, I don't think we talked about it. So generally, they are a leaf eater. Tree kangaroos in general are herbivores, foliovores, which is a leaf eater. But Machi street kangaroos eat at least 80 different types of plants Wow. that they have identified in the wild, which is amazing. And then, you know, occasionally an egg or maybe a baby bird. So they get just a smidge of protein. But for the most part, they are a plant eater. And I don't think we mentioned that. So I thought I'd throw it in there.
Good. I appreciate that. That's great. Yeah. Awesome. Real quick. You take care of other animals too, right?
I do.
Just want to say what they are quick, just to give a quick shout out.
I take care of hornbills.
Nice.
Which, hornbills, yeah. Really cool. Right now we just have one, but she's getting a new mate in the summer. And so that will be interesting. So we'll have a pair of hornbills. We have some smaller birds, otters, binturong occasionally,
nice.
Wallabies, which of okay. marsupials. Mm. I kind of try to claim them all for myself.
Have you guys noticed that her voice has completely changed now that she's not talking tree rose?
Yeah, see?
I mean, you're literally like, you just checked right out of this interview.
No, I love my wallabies, actually. Otters, maybe not so much.
Still give them the best care, of course.
Absolutely. No, you can't love everything the same. I know you're supposed to.
There is a rule on this podcast that anytime anybody says to me, I don't have favorites, I call them a liar tell me their favorite. Because it's just true. No one has ever been able to keep up the facade of saying I truly don't have favorites.
I don't even try. No. Fevers are my favorite. Yep. From the minute I met them, I don't know what it was. And you know when you know. So, you know, zookeepers know too. So, no, it's fine. It's okay to have a favorite.
I agree.
And I like pretty much everything except for insects. Sorry, insect people. Not my thing. But I'll take care of anybody else. But thanks anyway. I'm running the other way.
Awesome. And are there any conservation organizations you'd like to give a shout out to?
Well, the Tree Kangaroo Conservation Program is an amazing program. It's just passed its 20-year anniversary. It's run out of the Woodland Park Zoo in Seattle. And it's really thanks to that program that we know as much as we do about tree kangaroos. And they have a really good partnership with zoos because that's really where it started. The woman who runs the program, Dr. Lisa Daybeck, saw a tree kangaroo in a zoo when she was younger, decided to study that in college, and went from there to running this huge, globally recognized conservation program that has set aside thousands of acres of conservation land for the Machi tree kangaroo in New Guinea. And it's a really amazing program. It has a lot of facets to it, and it's recognized as really a model program for others to follow because it incorporates the native people, the cultural differences. It does, it employs the native people. It focuses on their needs as well as the animal needs, because if you can't match the human needs of the area, they're not going to help you conserve the animals of the area. So it's very successful, but of course, always looking for support. So Tree Kangaroo Conservation Program.
Awesome. And are they the ones that are setting up the rehab area that you were talking about, or is that a different thing?
That's different. So there we have the conservation program has partnerships with just about everybody that does anything with tree kangaroos. But that is the Port Moresby Nature Park in Port Moresby, New Guinea, is the first accredited zoo in New Guinea. And they are building a wildlife rescue and rehab center because people there's no other place to bring orphaned animals, injured animals, really. And so people bring them to the zoo, but they don't have a specific place to put them as opposed to their actual zoo animals. So they are building a rescue facility in conjunction with their zoo. And we are raising money. The conservation program raises money for them. The SSP raises money for them. Our zoo has donated quite a bit of money towards that project because it will benefit tree kangaroos and all the species that rely on that same forest. So it also will benefit, hopefully, the zoo population because we're hoping to bring some new tree kangaroos into the zoo population, which is small and really hasn't had any new genetics since the 1980s. So it would be very helpful for our population to remain healthy to bring in some new genes. And this would be our first opportunity to do that in many decades if the rehab center is successful, which is why we're supporting it.
And that, first of all, that's awesome. Second of all, for anyone listening, like we've talked a lot about on this podcast, the fact that zoos don't pull animals from the wild.
Correct.
So can you explain how a wildlife rehab can lead to an increase in population in the captive population without it pulling animals, like herding animals, taking them out of the wild?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. And it's one of the reasons we haven't had any new genes. So back in the 70s, early 80s, laws were different. And we were, you know, that's when the initial group of tree kangaroos were imported into the United States. But now zoos really don't import animals from the wild. What they can do is with this new rehab center, because people are going to be bringing them things regardless, it is already happening. So this just gives them a space to put them in. Those animals that are brought to the rehab center can't usually be put back out for a variety of reasons. They can't return to the wild. So they're already removed from the wild genetics, unfortunately, for whatever reason. So those animals, if they can breed in the rehab facility, then the offspring can go to zoos because that is not interrupting anything that hasn't already been lost from the wild. And that is our goal, hopefully, that we'll be bringing in offspring. So rather than wild-caught animals, which are the parents, even though they can't return to the wild, they are wild-caught. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to be encouraging people to catch things from the wild, because if people realize that they can make money from it or get some kind of, you know, benefit from that, they'll catch animals on purpose rather right. than just helping orphans or catching animals that are injured. So that way we will not be taking wild caught animals, we'll be taking captive born animals. And that's what we try to do in zoos, is we try to breed and have captive born animals because obviously those reasons, we don't want to be encouraging any type of wildlife traffic that would damage a wild population. Mm-hmm.
And I think that is such a brilliant way to get an infusion while only helping a population. I think when you were telling me that earlier, I was like, oh, I need to get this in this episode. That's so cool. It's time now, don't you know? We come to the end of the show. But there's one tale left to go. You're gonna laugh and say, oh no. It's time for the Rastafari poop story.
Oh boy.
I know.
I don't even know where to go with that. So I'm going to tell you about the poop dumpster, which is every zoo has a place to put poop. You have to, obviously. These days, most zoos either compost it themselves or send it out for composting. So that's good. That started probably late 80s, which is nice, instead of just, you know, dumping poop in a landfill. So in this zoo and most zoos, you collect your animal poop and put it in a vehicle of some kind, and then you back up to whatever type of dumping ground you have. In this zoo, it's a dumpster. It has been a common issue sometimes to overshoot and end up with yourself in your vehicle in the dumpster full of poop. For almost 20 years, I did not manage to land in a dumpster full of poop. And new people would say, have you ever backed into the dumpster? And I'd say, not yet. And then about 3 years ago, that streak ended. And the cart and I both entered the dumpster full of poop. and had to be dragged out by another vehicle with a chain. So I figure we'll all probably do it once. But if you are a zookeeper and you end up in the dumpster full of poop, you're in good company and has happened many, many times.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for doing this interview and thank you for the time with the Tree Roos today. It really meant the world to me.
Very good. The queen, we're lucky to have the queen. She's pretty good meeting her subjects. Kay Wang, not so much. Maybe someday. Maybe you'll come back and she'll be all friendly, but right now she's all teeth. So
we're still buds. We're still buds through mesh, but we're still buds.
There you go. Still buds. I tell her that someday we'll be friends and I know she doesn't believe it, but we will.
Love that. Thanks again.
You are welcome.
All right, folks. So there you have it. An entire episode dedicated to those cute little pouch goblins that I love so much. If you haven't checked out Paya on Roger Williams Park Zoo's social media yet, you really need to. It's at RWP Zoo. And you can go to rwpzoo.org to check out their website and get tickets to go see this adorable, adorable little creature. And like, you know, the other animals that they have at the zoo. Actually, I find it kind of amazing. Roger Williams Park Zoo doesn't have a sea turtle, but they have all three of my terrestrial favorite animals. And I don't know, you don't think of Providence, Rhode Island as the kind of place where you can go and see binturongs and red pandas and tree kangaroos, but they've got a really great collection at that zoo, and I'm always excited to be able to feature them. So I'd like to say a special moment of thanks to Corey at Roger Williams Park Zoo. She is the person who has been helping me set up all of the different interviews there, and has just been really supportive of the pod and a really kind person. And we hung out at the AZA conference a little bit and everything, and Corey, just thank you for really putting up with me. And I appreciate it so much. I also, as a podcaster, need to say thank you to all of my patrons, and especially my Red Panda level patrons, Laura Shank and Kristen Dickey. And I'd like to remind y'all that the words tree kangaroo backwards are ert or agnac. The Ross Safari Podcast is produced, hosted, and engineered by John Rossi. Editing and fact-checking by John and Dr. Zoe Rossi. Our theme song is Sevens by Nathan Burke, performed by Nathan and John. Interrupting John theme and additional voices by Taylor Isaac Gray. You can reach John directly on Instagram and Facebook at Ross Safari or by email at rossafaripod@gmail.com. Ross Safari is part of the Daydreamer Media Network. Now, stop listening to me and go visit a zoo.